Hello there, fiend. This is the caretaker for the Louisville Ghost Hunter Society's official podcast, and you're listening to an excellent, scary, spooky, freaky podcast that's been put together by lovely people who care about people like me, the bony undead. But anyway, I just want to let you know that the Louisville Ghost Hunter Society podcast is available at www.louisvillegs.com or on iTunes. So, haunt your iPod today and get me in there, okay? Possess me by your iPod. Make me feel at home inside your little portable MP3 player. And of course, learn about the paranormal and get freaked out along the way. All right, back in the grave I go. But be sure and download our podcast and subscribe, because I'll miss you and haunt you if you don't.
Down. to find your charm. Can't seem to find your charm. Can't seem to find your charm.
Hi, this is Steve at MyParaSpace. You can visit us on the web at www.myparaspace.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
That's right. Ghost Month.
Since Ghost Month 2006.
We wait 9 months for this every year. It is officially October today. October 1st, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who's excited? Are you excited, Doug?
Woo!
Are you excited, Bonnie?
I'm extremely excited. I'm 30 days away from being 33.
That's
kind
of
like
morbid.
A little bit morbid to throw it out.
33
is a really high number. Now, I have to say,
not as high as my number, my upcoming number.
We love doing Ghost Month, and people like we were giving our talk last weekend in Louisville, for example, and people were like, we do Ghost Month on Ghostly Talk in October.
We talked to Ghost Hunters.
Yeah, and like we kind of got this look like, okay, the name of your show is Ghostly Talk, and now you're bragging about having this Ghost Month where you talk nothing but ghost hunters. And that does sound kind of ridiculous when you think about it for a second.
But my favorite thing to do.
Well, yeah, we specialize this month for that because simply we talk about so much stuff on the show now, obviously, that we wanted to take 1 month out and just do nothing but ghost hunting organizations, ghost hunting groups and stuff like that. And boy, I hope that we haven't lost him yet.
So do I.
I feel like it keeps hanging up.
Bo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, right, we're going to introduce you.
Just, yeah,
I am leaving.
I've had enough of this already.
This is going on and on again, just like they always do.
No, this is the great. We got a bunch of great groups this month that we're going to be talking to. I'm really excited about it. Namely, the group, the gentleman who we just heard from a second ago, Bo Woods. He is the founder of the GHO, which is Ghost Hunters Organization, where Bo founded this group in 1997 in Northern Utah and has been the soul of GHO since its formation almost a decade ago. Whether it is the GHO or one of its affiliate members from GHON, Ghost Hunters Organization Network, right? You can be rest assured that your case will be handled professionally and discreetly, which is a really important thing. I think a lot of groups that are newer out here, they don't understand this idea that, not everybody wants you to know or you to, especially neighbors, let's say, right?
Yeah.
They don't all want to know what's going on here. So welcome to the show, Bo. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Really, really good. You said
your website, by the way, is www.orbchasers.com.
Mm.
Correct.
Thought I would mention that.
Been to the sites. Yeah, thanks, Doug.
Yeah.
I haven't done a bio in a while. What do you want me to do? You're much more practiced at this.
Bo, help us out here. How are things going in Northern Utah and through your GHON, through the network?
Things are actually going good in Northern Utah. Still going strong out there. Got plenty of cases. I just actually settled down in Southern New Jersey, so I'm starting a little group here. To start investigating some of the cases. Really excited to be back on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff I've done has been out west. But, the history back here is fabulous. The affiliate members are going great,
mm-hmm.
Going strong. We're picking up new members all the time. And just trying to form that network of reliable groups that people can trust that are going to, like you said, come in discreetly. And handle your case professionally. And one of my big deals is the whole, you know, you have to represent your organization well. You have a lot of people out there that I've seen that, you know, come dressed in all black or wearing eye makeup and on men and,
really?
And things like that. That really, you want the client to be comfortable. You don't want
well,
to come
yeah.
in thinking things are going to happen that aren't associated with anything paranormal. You don't want to have them afraid, or you want them to think that the people that are there are responsible and they can help.
So well, yeah, I'll leave my fire engine red lipstick at home.
Well, I gotta be honest, Bo. That's the first time. I mean, it's obviously, and I'm sure it's happened. Thinking about it now, but honestly, if I was somebody who asked for, like, you know, an investigation at my house or something like that, and somebody walked in with eye makeup under their eye, I think I'd be making them do an about face and go out the door.
That is true. I think that representing your group. Whenever you go into a case, you should definitely think about your general appearance and your general level of professionalism. And if you walk in dressed as a skateboarder or something like that, or if you walk in
hang on for a second there, take it easy on me.
I know. But if you walk in dressed as or dressed in, you know, I'm super goth, you know, which it's fine to be, you know, into goth, and I
super goth. Super goth.
Okay, you know what?
It's a Marilyn Manson concert. Oh,
that's Scott's Halloween costume.
You know, I actually watched Who Wants to Be a Superhero on TV.
Oh, God, no.
And they did not have Super Goth on.
They got to have Super Goth.
That, I hope it's going to be on Who Wants to Be a Superhero.
He just bores the criminals to death.
He makes them so depressed.
He makes them so depressed they just kill themselves.
He just killed themselves right there.
Yeah, there you go.
I have to say, I'm calling Stan. I'll call Stan. Stan, give me a call if I don't call you.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Doug, I didn't mean to cut you, but that was super goth.
I can't believe I let myself set myself up for you.
This is what super goth would look like.
That is Scott's Halloween costume.
A scowl. All black with the black makeup under his eyes.
You need a scowl.
The stringy black, like, dyed hair.
I was trying to make
sorry. I'm sorry. All right.
And I was trying to agree with Bo.
Can you remember it now?
No. Your presentation, it's got to be a whole package. It really does. Whether it's October, if it's October, obviously people are a little more, you know, into the creepiness. But whether it's October or January or mid-June, you want to come across as, hey, you know what? We're going to go in. We're serious about your case. We want to help you. We may not be able to understand, to explain everything because it's still, you know,
yeah.
we don't have all the answers, but we can try and get the observations. We can, you know, try and get the photos, the EVPs. We're going to try and get all this stuff.
Evidence possible.
And if you have something, going on, if we can't help you, we know who can. That kind of thing. You want to really present yourself in that manner. And I'm really glad to hear about that, Bo, that that's going on. What do your clients have to say? When you go out and present yourself professionally, that builds a level of trust, obviously.
Right. You guys are you're kind of breaking up on me. I don't know if it's my phone or
not. Oh, no.
That's our gremlins.
That's our gremlins.
We have gremlins tonight.
Can you hear us okay, Bo? Can you hear us
yep,
all right
we
now?
Do indeed have gremlins. We call them gremlins. And they
go into the phone line and make it sound choppy.
When things happen, yes. That's our gremlins, and they're very active tonight, being, you know, talking to ghost hunters. That's what happens. But
can you hear us okay? Is it all right?
They must have known it was Ghost Month.
They do indeed. They have it on their calendar. And we call it the gremlins. It's when our board goes awry. And it's going awry a little bit tonight.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep it in check, though, Bo. We promise to do better.
That's all right. I'm having trouble hearing. But go ahead. What was that question?
Well, more. Go ahead.
How do your clients perceive that when you go in? You're very professional. You explain to them up front. This is what we're going to look for. This is what we're going to do for you. This is what we're going to help you with. We're going to try, and then that builds a level of trust.
Right. Correct. That's exactly what you want the clients to do, is trust you. You don't want them to have to fear anything else. And you're right, not to bang on the goth crowds or any of the other crowds.
Oh, feel free to bang on them all you want. I mean, go right ahead.
There goes our entire MySpace listener.
The paranormal draws an interesting crowd.
Yeah, it does.
A very wide range of people.
Mm.
But, you know, you can't go in there, like you said, looking like Marilyn Manson to to look for a ghost, people just aren't going to go for that. They're not going to feel comforted. And that's all we really want, is people to feel comforted. Whether we find anything or not, we just want them to know, you know, that they can't really hurt you in any case that has ever been substantiated with any amount of evidence that I've seen to be reputable. There's been no real cases of actual, like, very bad bodily harm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always use the term when I'm talking to clients that it would feel to me like, imagine walking around for 5 years and you're trying to talk to people and no one can hear you, no one talks back. I would imagine that I would just be such a frustrated individual that, you know, I might start moving stuff. I might start throwing things off the shelf. it seems like once you tell clients that it's okay to acknowledge the presence and just kind of, you know, take control of your house again, let them know that you know they're there, but, hey, it's my place now. You know, you can't scare me. You can't harm me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that brings a lot of reassurance to clients. And it seems like after an investigation, at least in my experience, I can't really talk for all of my members, but in most of the cases that I've dealt with, it seems like once we do an investigation, if the client wants us to do so and we ask the spirit to you know, calm down or they're going to have to leave, everyone that I've always heard from says that, you know, they've usually quieted down. I had a case at a restaurant where they asked me to do so, but then they started seeing the apparition a lot more, but it was always very, I guess I would say, docile. Like, it never intimidated anyone. They would just see it from across the room. But it was clearly still there. It just wasn't making itself known the way that was making the waitresses and things uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that are good. And with spirits, I think you have to take control. You can't let them smell the fear on you, I guess. I don't know what to make them out to be, like animals, but I think it seems like with some of them, they really draw off that, and they will tend to exploit that if they know that they can get a reaction out of you.
Well, that's something we hear a lot from whether it be psychics or ghost hunters like yourself, or, I mean, lots of people have felt, people that have never even had experience in this before, they say the same thing, like, look, okay, there's something here, I don't know what it is, but, you know, pride steps in and says, look, I bought this house, I spent a lot of money on this house, for example, and you're not going to scare me out of it. So people take control of the situation and say, look, we may be able to live together here, all right, but we're going to have to see each other, you know, more or less, this is my house, I'll deal with this if I have to, but you're not going to scare me out.
Right.
I've heard about this with a lot of people as far as their homes are concerned. Now, you were talking about this restaurant example, though. You said that, was it after you guys investigated this restaurant that they started seeing this apparition a lot more?
Yeah.
Was it afterwards? Do you think that was an idea of maybe they were so to say, hypersensitive after that? They were obviously on the lookout a lot more, so that maybe that's why they were seeing it a lot more?
Probably. It was definitely drawn to the attention of a lot more employees than the original few that had problems with it and told their manager. So I think everyone was just kind of on the lookout. And, yeah, their attention might have been, you know, elevated to look for something unusual like that.
Do you think, and I'm just asking this, I'm not like, you know, okay, this is what really happened here, Bo. Do you think maybe some of these people because what we talk about a lot on here is, you know, it's very easy to get people to see ghosts. If you get them freaked out enough, they'll see all kinds of wild things.
Yeah, of course.
Do you think maybe their imaginations kicked in? They just got a little, it was an overactive imagination maybe in some cases.
Yes, and it's really hard to disprove what someone's telling you. I mean, unless you build up evidence, we like to take people's word for the most point and then disprove it when we're investigating, you know, through the evidence we find or don't find, determine what that is, and then try to educate them on, you know, these things weren't paranormal at all. It was really just, you know, this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, and I mean, I'm sure that may have been probably a mixture of both of them. I'm sure people actually really saw something in that restaurant.
Oh, yeah. The night we were investigating that place, there were claims by a couple of the female waitresses, I guess, would put the gender on that. But they had claimed that they were being touched and, like, whispered things in their ears as they were walking around at night closing closing and setting the chairs on the tables and things. So mm-hmm. when we were in there investigating, I was walking around with the lady that said she had had the most problems. And she was walking behind me, and I had the EMF detector and the IR night the camcorder with me. And at one point, I was standing still scanning this part of the restaurant that mm-hmm. they said they had had a lot of activity in. And she was, like, huddled on my back, and she about ran me over saying that something had touched her on the back of the neck. She started screaming and crying.
Poor child.
It, I don't, you know, I don't, with people like that, you don't know, is this a loon, or did something actually just happen here? Like, my back was turned to her, so I didn't catch anything. EMF detector didn't go off, but I've seen a lot of cases where we record evidence, and you don't get a correlation in those things a lot of times. You might get a spike on the EMF detector,
mm-hmm.
no cold spots, no photographs, no video, no EMS, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. You might get two things, but not everything correlates together all the time. When it does, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So I had no way to back up her claim, but she reacted like something had actually happened. So.
Well, again, these experiences, and I've been saying this a lot since I've seen it. Since
that would be first-hand testimony.
Well, yeah.
You know.
Since I got to see Jeff Belanger speak, when he talked about this whole idea of these experiences being your own.
Right.
And that, you know, it just because you don't have a picture to back it up, or a audio sample to back it up, or, you know, 500 witnesses to back you up,
right.
You know, that's, unfortunately, yeah, as far as a skeptical viewpoint goes, you're not going to be able to prove the existence of the afterlife. Boo-hoo, I'm sorry, okay? It isn't going to happen today. It may not happen tomorrow.
But it sure
means
something
to
you right then and
exactly.
there.
Exactly, and that's a very important thing. That's what I like to tell people, too, that we've talked to a lot of people in the last couple of weeks here being on the road, and it's like, look, well, I think I saw something, Scott. I know it. Well, good, and you saw something. That's cool. All right? I can't sit here and tell you, well, I agree with you, because I didn't see it myself. But if
right.
you saw something, you take that with you, you grow from that, you learn from that, and maybe you'll see something again. Maybe you'll have an experience again. And I think that's a very cool thing. I mean, that's just...
And that really does, it adds to the body of evidence, because you're giving first-person testimony to something, something
yes.
still outside the realm of... our understanding.
Exactly.
So it, every little bit helps. Speaking of outside the realm of our understanding and photographs, which is what you were mentioned photographs, so I thought I'd throw that in. Your website is orbchasers.com.
Yes.
And you must have heard about the huge debate about orbs in
Correct.
Photographs and digital photography and also 35mm photography. There's orbs in there as well a little bit. But what's your take on it? Because it seems to me if anybody has been probably emailed until to oblivion on orbs, it's got to be you. So, Bo, what about orbs? Tell me about orbs with digital versus 35mm. What's up with that?
You know, actually, through my kind of investigating into the whole controversy, I guess you would call it. Just a little background, like, you know, orbs really seemed to come about in, I guess it was like the early to mid 90s. There was just this influx of pictures with orbs in them.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the segue over to digital, you know, it drastically increased that there were all these just orbs everywhere. I've seen pictures of people with, you know, thousands of orbs around them.
We call them a school of orbs, by the way.
Yeah,
school.
A gaggle.
A gaggle. A murder of
a
orbs.
A murder of orbs.
So is that spiritual? Is it dust? You know, what causes it? That's the controversy that came about. And with the digital versus 35mm, a lot of my beef before learning some information that I picked up a couple months ago was 35mm, you have a way to back up what you've photographed.
Mm-hmm.
You have a negative that proves that picture hasn't been altered since it was, you know, enlarged
mm-hmm.
and processed. With digital, as everyone knows, digital can be manipulated so very easily that people do amazing things with photographs nowadays. I myself have pictures in Photoshop of me as Jesus, you know, kneeling at an altar. It's fun. I have a degree in it, but never alter my photographs, by the way.
Just
But I really am leaning to stay away from the whole orb thing. It's recently came to my attention that I guess there was a change in the way the lenses were placed on the cameras in like the mid-80s to late 90s. All of that hitting the market is about the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The lenses became closer to the eye of the camera, therefore, you know, causing more reflectiveness that eye takes in when you're taking a photograph. So I started leaning towards that. I mean, it's all just theory, really.
Yeah.
No one knows for sure if orbs do exist, and they are.
Well, as is everything. I mean, what we're
spiritual,
doing.
Spiritual, yeah. Right, correct. That all of these things are just dust, and it's really changed by the way cameras have been developed. And on the other side, with digital, I mean, the flashes have become so much brighter
in
the past 10, 15 years that they will reflect more. I mean, they're trying to get the focal length of the camera at greater distances at night, so they're increasing, you know, all of that stuff to be able to take that in.
Mm-hmm.
They also have infrared chips in them, which will bounce back rather oddly off of certain particles floating in the air. So I've really kind of thrown out the whole orb thing. Have I stopped taking cameras on investigations with me? Of course not. I long for the apparition. I mean, what ghost investigator doesn't?
Yeah.
And I think they're a valuable tool when recalling a case and going over information to document, okay, this is where I was, this is what was going on. You have that picture to always remind you what happened at that time.
Mm.
But there's just such an influx. Like you said, anybody can get pictures of orbs. They're everywhere. And when I first started out, like many young investigators, that was gold to me.
That was cool, yeah.
Orbs,
wasn't it?
Oh my gosh, it's got to be haunted. But you know, as we all learn more and you know, people do more tests and more research into what these things actually are, we all kind of move further along.
Well, that's when I know when I got my first school of orbs, I was excited. I'll admit it. I've made it a million times over.
Yeah, very, very true. You can go on the first website that I created, and there's a lot of orb pictures. But a lot of those also came when we were getting spikes in other evidence, which leads me to believe there might be a correlation.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, I'm really torn between it because I've taken a lot of control shots, you know, at my house or at a park or wherever I might be, you know, roll through a roll of film or take 50 to 100 shots on the digital just to see if I get anything, and I very rarely get orbs in places that aren't haunted. But
mm-hmm.
because of the controversy about the pictures, I throw it all out. I can't put it on my websites anymore. It's considered garbage right now. Until something is proven one way or another, I'm tending to lean towards the skeptical side that it's all garbage.
Well, one thing to think about too, Bo, actually, and it's an idea that was proposed to us about a month and a half ago by Dr. Stephen Rourke, is that if there is this new, what he's proposing, and this could work for photos also, as opposed to, in his case, EVP.
Yeah,
work.
He wants to do EVP, but
and this could work for photo work too, where a new best evidence standard, where you raise the bar. For example, I mean, orbs are, yeah, they're wonderful, they're very interesting, and you, right now, have proposed some very interesting ideas concerning this, and as far as your research is concerned, Bo. But, I mean, as far as a best evidence standard, okay, let's take, as far as, you know, this is just for example's sake, too. Let's take the orb thing and just push it to a side for a little while here, and only focus on shots that are maybe more mist-like type shots, more where you would focus more on an apparition-type shot.
Yeah, vortex apparition.
Now, that's really setting the bar a lot higher. I mean,
right.
You know what I mean? And that just depends on your personality, I think, too.
And then when everybody's running around getting misty shots or vortex shots,
yeah.
Then it's like, okay, now we're going to have to raise the bar one more time to full body.
But really, I mean, it's a matter of investigating and seeing, well, how do we get these shots? where were we when we got these shots? I mean, it's a matter of really investigating the whole gamut, I think. And, I mean, like I said, you have to take baby steps with a lot of this stuff, too, yeah. I think. You can't just, I mean, raising the bar is one thing, but if you're not prepared to raise the bar, don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do it. You're just gonna disappoint yourself to the point where you don't want to do it anymore. And I don't want to see that happen to people. So there is that idea, too.
People that ghost, if you're going to be open, you have to be open about all aspects of everything, I think. You can't be closed-minded on some things and open on others.
Absolutely, you're correct. Bo, why don't we take a quick break here, okay?
Okay.
We got a lot to cover here. We're talking to Bo Woods from GHO. This is, like, totally cool. This is a start. We're running out of the gate right now. Ghost Month is a whole month long, obviously. And we're going to be talking to people like Bo all month, getting perspectives, ideas on the field of ghost hunting, which is
inspiring. This is really starting it off right, Bo.
Thank you. So inspiring to talk to someone. Guys, we'll be right back. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott Allen.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back after this.
Little tutorial in GHI. We're gonna teach you what to do when you first see a ghost. Okay? We're gonna look for a ghost, and then if we see one, we're gonna do the right steps of action afterwards. So, you know, you wanna be calm, you don't wanna do anything stupid, you wanna sit there, say your prayers or whatever, make the ghost go away, ask the questions maybe. But whatever you do, you can't scream, you cannot run, you can't do anything like that. It's only going to make it worse. And it's not like you're going to outrun them, because they'll follow you wherever you go. So let's do it. Let's go. Follow me. This is the Church of the Damned, where it's known haunted. Very, very, very haunted. Books have been thrown, people have been thrown. And hopefully tonight we get some action. Very creepy, there's no lights anywhere in here, so if you have a flashlight, it'd be good, which we don't, so that sucks. And windows, cracked windows, very nice, beautiful, and stuff. And we're just gonna look around here, I'm just gonna stop right here, hang on a little bit. Is anyone here? It's good to ask you questions.
Nick, check out that. Look at this corner. Look at the corner over there.
Corner.
No, over there.
This is Kevin Cogdill from Area Paranormal. You can find us on the web at www.areaparanormal.com or email us any evidence for analysis at areaparanormal@gmail.com. And you are listening to Ghostly Talk.
October 1st, 2006, and this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doc.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Bonnie.
And we're talking with Bo Woods of www.orbchasers.com. We just got done asking about orbs, which is, of course, something that you must get quite often, Bo. So thank you for that opinion. It's true. It's definitely true. Orbs are now relegated to the big iffy pile,
you know.
So what can you do? What's your favorite place to ghost hunt? What's your favorite kind of ghost hunt? Or when you go out, what are you hoping for? Or what are you? What really, really gets you going?
What really gets me going? First off, I tend to prefer indoor investigations just because of the control of the environment that you can get above the outdoors. You have the insects and everything flying around and all the environmental noises that comes with outdoors. Indoors are my preferences. I tend to prefer larger buildings myself, just more area to cover. I prefer, like, hotels, things like that really get me going. Restaurants, things that have a lot of history. Residences, to me, it goes to the, you know, you could have someone that's a loon living there. I've had people call me out that once I got there, they wanted nothing to do with talking about ghosts. They just wanted to know about my life. So you run into that a lot when you investigate private residences, whereas buildings, you know, usually they're seriously calling you for a reason. And the larger they are, with the more history, the better. What I'm looking for is I tend to now focus on EVPs and, of course, all the electromagnetic field readings, temperature increases and decreases, things of that nature, more of the scientific part of it, as opposed to the photographic evidence now is pretty much, you know, blown out the window, unless you come up with that great apparition where mists are still somewhat credible given the right environmental conditions. Once again, those can be easily faked as well, though, so you never know. I like things that can be more controlled. With EVPs, you know, if I'm with a limited number of people, say four or five, I know where they were, what they were saying. We take very detailed logs of every picture we take, every noise that we hear when we're on investigation. And we tend to have investigators go off two at a time. So you have dual recordings of what was happening. So you know that someone wasn't trying to whisper and make something appear to be paranormal that wasn't at all. You get a little check and balance there with those two people. But really, you know, I'm looking for the full blown stuff now. That's what really wets my whistle.
And that, of course, doesn't happen very often. When it does, though, it's got to be really a thrill. I know that I picked up the book about the Bell Witch over the weekend, last weekend, and unfortunately, that talk about raising the bar. I don't think the Bell Witch did any. I don't think she or he even knew that there was a bar, because
right.
It was just, like, way off the scale. And to read this thing, what Williams Bell had written, absolutely blows everything away that I've ever seen, and it just is insane. So when I go out, I'm a little bit the opposite of you in regards to favorite haunts. I'm looking for a public location. It's got to be public. Whether it's indoors or outdoors, I don't care. One of the things that I look for is a haunt that can happen to anyone. If anybody could see the ghost dressed in white cross the road, or the the ghost of the longtime customer at the end of the bar, you know, it doesn't matter to me if my school teacher can see this, and I can see this, and anybody can experience this ghost or this haunting, even if it's, you know, something flying across the room, or, you know, just a phenomena as opposed to an actual ghost. Anybody can experience it, then that really, really tickles me. That's my favorite kind.
Right.
So private residences, while they're interesting, and I do indeed enjoy helping people, right?
Of course.
It's not among my those aren't among my favorite types of haunts.
No, and I would agree about the diversity of people that can encounter the presence. That's why I lean towards the motel side of things on the indoor
mm-hmm.
side, because you get a wide range of people coming through those doors and staying in those rooms, and that's a lot of a lot of evidence that can be backed up over time. If something goes wrong in someone's motel room while they're trying to sleep at night, usually they're going to make a complaint to the desk downstairs.
Yeah.
So you get somewhat of a log of events of what's happened in a particular room or location in the hotel.
Yeah, I couldn't sleep because of the rattling change in the bathroom.
That was your neighbors. We got a couple complaints about them.
But yeah, so it's interesting how that works. But the Bell Witch, for example, that's my current favorite thing because I'm reading the book, is absolutely she absolutely showed no favoritism toward anyone. She would just sit there and talk to anybody for hours on end. And
yeah, I would love to get down and investigate that. I'd love to just travel the country, you know, like the oysters, even though, you know, who knows if they're up to good or evil. But it's such a great thing to travel around the country in an RV and just be able to investigate it anywhere.
We have not talked to David and Sharon.
No?
Ever on the show.
No.
Yeah.
I don't. You'll probably have to pay him to get him on the air.
Well, that's kind of what I've heard. That's why I'm like, you know.
Well,
we'll see.
I don't know. It depends. And but I know that there's interesting opinions on both sides about their organization.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, now I'm in a hole.
Now I'm like 4 foot in a hole, and I can't get out.
No, I don't think there's any. I mean, that's what you do in this field. You're going to have opinions like that. You're going to have groups like that going around. So it just happens. So hey, fine, no problem.
So let's without further ado change the subject. And now for something completely different.
Yeah.
What about experimentation? Now when you're out and about, because orb chasers and GHO and GHON, you follow the prescribed set of parameters and you go out with these instruments that you're familiar with. You can operate in the dark. And you take the measurements and you record everything and you've gotten good at that, which, by the way, and I've been hunting a long time, I'm still not quite up to par at the writing everything down thing. I always think I can remember something, and then I invariably forget it until someone reminds me. So I'm still at the not quite there stage, but personally, that doesn't mean I mean, I know people who are like right there. Totally organized. Everything's
right.
You know, cross-referenced and marked and bookmarked.
Yeah.
But I'm not there yet. But I do my best, and I still have a lot of fun, and I still learn a lot every investigation I go on. But you guys do that. But one of the things that we've been doing a lot here amongst our group is experimentation. We try different things. We've tried, because we talk to so many people on the show, we try different things. And so I wonder how much experimentation do you get to do?
We actually do quite a bit, whether it be from trying to disprove orbs on our own by doing different experimentations with, you know, throwing dust and lint and various things in the air to see the results, to experimenting with new equipment.
Yeah.
I've been using something that was brought to my attention about 6 years ago, termed a real-time recorder. It's used a lot in the recording industry.
With the floating playback head thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. We've been experimenting a lot with that to try to open up a dialogue with a ghost. I mean, that would be the impression. I don't know if many listeners know, but in a regular tape recorder, you have the head which records directly onto the tape, and you cannot hear what's actually on the tape until you play the tape back. With what I call a real-time recorder, you have two heads, one which records and one which plays back what's directly imprinted on the tape. The way that I've manufactured these for my group, there's, I don't know how the professional ones work, but there's about a 38th of a second delay in what you say to what you hear back in your headphones. The theory being that when you hear an EVP, you could then respond, you know, yes, I heard you. What is it really like where you are? Or whatever the conversation might be. We've gotten very varied results with that. We haven't actually gotten a ghost to respond to us, but the excitement level that you get when you're actually hearing that voice a 38th of a second after you've recorded it is phenomenal to know that, you know, right where I'm standing, I picked up an EVP of something that I cannot explain.
Yeah.
Hey, you said something about, you said the 38th of a second in the one that, the ones that you've created. What, do you create them or do you buy these things?
The ones that we have for our group, I've created. I'm basically taking, you know, buying a, we like to use the tabletop cassette recorders that you can set down in a location for this particular device, as opposed to carrying it around. The reason being is that I take apart a couple cassette recorders and, you know, wire the heads into the new device with the guts from the Walkman that I took the head out of, so that that head that's playback plugs directly in to the headphone jack. It's tricky to get them aligned, and it takes quite a bit of time, but it's something that's very interesting in the field. And up until recently, I haven't seen many investigators using these things. Like I said, it came to me at about 2001, I think was when I first became aware of them, through a group called the GIS that was located in Utah. Really good friends of mine. They're
going to have Brennan
out. EVP work.
Brennan's going to be on at the end of the month, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wonderful.
We're going to be talking to Brennan, yeah.
Wonderful. He's a great guy.
I sense a little industry going on. I mean, you can actually sit there and build these things and sell them. I don't have enough patience.
You know, with the benefits of my job, I'm a do computer-aided drafting, so I go through a wide variety of fields, one of which was the electrical engineering industry, right around the time that I was introduced to this device. So I got to sit down with my boss and actually have him kind of walk me through it, and then it was just repetition after that. So.
Wow, that's absolutely cool. And
it was. It really worked out well for me.
So you're now on the East Coast, and what have you noticed, because now we're talking to somebody who has the experience in Utah, right? And now you're on the East Coast, and you've got this going on. You've moved back there, right? So you've got two different areas of the country. Compare and contrast. This sounds like a sixth grade report, doesn't it?
Yeah, I actually went from Utah to Arizona, and then got a job in Maine, and then we had my grandmother-in-law got ill, so we moved down to New Jersey to take care of her. Ended up getting a wonderful job down here, so I think we're staying. But the contrast is interesting. You know, the haunts, I think, are, you know, generally the same. There seems to be more out here because of, I guess, the length of time that things have been established out here as opposed to the West. Tucson was great because it had history all the way from Spanish missionaries before, you know, states were even founded out there, and a lot of times before we had even colonized America. So there's a lot of history out there, but here there was a lot more people. One of the major differences I've noticed in switching sides of the country is people's view on ghosts from the East to the West. The East Coast, in my experience, you know, I have my organization name on the back of my Jeep and my web address, so I get a lot of public feedback as I'm driving around on people's ideas about ghosts. And the East Coast tends to be more religious from my encounters. I've been told I'm fooling with Satan and all types of things. I mean, I've been ridiculed to death. Utah was bad for that too, just because of the religious views there. I mean, I was laughed out of buildings a couple times because people there didn't believe in what I was doing. And you know, I have an open mind. I'm willing to do it. The haunts out here, like I said, seem to be a greater number of them. And they're phenomenal, too, here in southern Jersey. I mean, there's just so much history around. But the religious backings of people tend to turn those encounters they have with the spirits into, you know, some logical explanation thing. And I think they tend to downplay a lot of things that they encounter here. I was also told that it could be because hauntings are so great out here that people just have learned to live with them, and it's not really a big deal. I mean, in Maine, people were telling me, you know, everyone knows a house down the street that has a ghost in it. I mean, growing up, you hear stories all the time. And I think people have just come to kind of deal with it. I mean, a greater percentage of the population believes in ghosts now than ever before in history. So I think a lot of people are coming around to the possibility that there might be something there after death. I still don't know, even after all I've encountered, but I tend to think there is.
Have you seen a ghost?
I have not, and I had I've had some great experiences starting from when I was nine. I lived in a house in Idaho. Me and my mom moved around, and it's kind of like that show on the Travel or Discovery Channel, Flip That House or whatever show that's on.
Yep,
we would move
yep.
into places and renovate, and this one particular place we moved into on the third story where my bedroom was, my bedroom door had a padlock on the outside of it when we moved in, and then in cleaning out the cold air return vents on the floor, in the vent in my room, shoved back about arm's length, there was a couple cans of food and an old military-style can opener. Anyway, I was laying in bed one day and reading a book. I still remember it clearly. It's called The Laugh Book, Little Yellow Book of Limericks and Poems. It's just burned into my brain. And the bottom left corner of my bed just picked up and started shaking pretty violently. Like, it was kind of slow at first and then grew faster. I was just frozen and paralyzed with fear. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I was trying to call my mom. And I was looking right down at the corner of the bed, but I couldn't see anything. That's what kind of piqued my interest in ghosts, and then getting involved in investigating. I mean, I've seen pages of books turn. I've seen doors close. I've seen things move on tables. I've even been touched a couple times by something unseen. I felt my clothes being tugged on, but I have never seen a ghost, and that's, I think that will be the proof to me. Well, that or I'll either get locked up for being insane. I'll think that's absolutely crazy. But that's really, that's my nirvana, I guess. That's what I'm looking for.
Mm. Well, that's the thing. You know, I have myself, though, I've never seen a ghost either. You know, and like you made a very interesting comment a few minutes ago, that people more than ever nowadays seem to be believing in the afterlife and or spirits and stuff like that. I'm wondering what your opinion is on that, too. Like, what do you think is the reason for that nowadays? Why now more than ever are people believing in this or actually exploring this through ghost hunting or whatever type of study there are? I'm wondering what your opinion is on that. Why so many people are into that?
I think it's you know, a lot has to do with the media, sadly to say. They get things wrong a lot of the time, but they're at least putting the idea out there. I mean, like the movie White Noise was great. It was so realistic to how true EVP is captured and what it's all about. But then it was just turned horrible with spirits, you know, murdering people. And so you get those conflicting things where the media doesn't, like Hollywood doesn't really want to have a movie that's about ghost hunting. As you know, a lot of times it's us sitting in a basement for 6 hours, you know, twiddling our thumbs, staring at a wall and talking to ourselves. That's not really good TV.
No, it isn't the most we tell people that all the time here, is that, look, if you want to get into this thing, this isn't the most exciting field to be into. It isn't like the movies or TV shows you it is. Sometimes it can be very boring, and you'll spend 6 to 12 hours sitting around talking to yourself like you just said. But
not if you take not if you take an EVP session with me and Bonnie at Moundsville. West Virginia State Penitentiary.
Yeah.
For some reason, those are very entertaining EVP experiences.
Always entertaining when you and I do EVP.
That is true. That is true. If anything can be said, we at least entertain the other side. but, wow, that was something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there are many, many long, drawn-out hours of, is anyone there? What's your name?
Which is why you better like the people that you're with.
Well, yeah. Exactly. So,
that is, I mean, go ahead. Sorry, Bo.
I was going to say, one of the things I've tried to do with my group ever since, you know, back in its founding days, was open it up to anyone that's interested. I really wish more groups would do that. So many groups close themselves off to a discreet, you know, group of friends or people that have come together and worked together for so many years, and they're just this tight-knit little team, which I think is good for evidence and the collecting standpoint when you have someone that you've known for years and worked with all the time. But I'm really in it more for educating people. You know, I want everyone to know it's not like that Hollywood side at all, where I got asked to do the Travel Channel while I was in Utah, and they called me up and they asked if I had anyone on my team that was like the psychic from Poltergeist, you know, Carol Ann, come into the light. It's like, you know, like...
Yeah, because we all have that on our team.
Yeah, everybody has... Yeah.
Everyone has one of those.
We all have a Zelda on our team.
Special investigations.
Mm-hmm.
Like little midgets we keep in the closet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
With crazy psychic midgets.
Yeah.
But everyone just has this conception that ghosts are either, you know, demonic or they're going to harm you and they kill people and that we as investigators are all kooky. I mean...
Well, I think that's why the Travel Channel or History or any of these other channels have not called Ghostly Talk yet, because they probably listen to this show.
And they go, oh,
and
my God.
Just about every show we talk about that and go, look, it is not like that. We don't have a little midget next to us here every week talking with us. Yeah, I mean, technically we do in a way.
I knew it was coming. Yeah, I knew it was
coming. But I don't think Bonnie's psychic, though, and she don't speak like this and say it like you said.
Oh, no, it's much, much deeper.
The house is clean.
This house is clean.
But no, I think they may have listened to the show and heard. They may have listened to the show and heard us say that. But like, look, this is. They probably would realize, okay, this is a waste of a phone call to bother these guys because they're going to tell us to piss off, more or less. We don't need. We don't want
to
hear about it.
I have to say I just did a mental review of this past hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we've alienated a lot of people.
Good.
I do want to say that one of the things that I'm very happy about, Bo, is that you're saying bring the experience to a lot of people, and that's something that I have to wholeheartedly agree with, and it doesn't matter if you dress all in black and wear white pancake makeup or whatever. You could do that. You could dress as Ronald McDonald. You could. I it doesn't matter what you do.
Now that would be entertaining for a ghost hunt, right?
That would be fun. But I have to say, it doesn't matter if you're into this and you're experimenting and you're coming up with ideas or documentation and putting things on the internet.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That's just fine with me because then you are adding to the body of evidence. I have to say, when presenting yourself to a client, you know, even though it's free, there is a different level of expectations that they would have. That's all I was saying earlier. And for me, it doesn't matter. I've met some pretty interesting characters, even as clients. So
yeah, right.
I didn't turn them away. I'm like, hey, yeah, I want to meet your ghost. You know, what's next for GHO, the GHON, and OrbChasers.com? What's going on in the upcoming months and the upcoming projects? What's up?
We're really looking to expand our coverage into further states so we can help more people. Some of our experiments that we've got coming up, we're just pushing ahead with that real-time recorder, making little tweaks to that here and there to get better tunage. I'm actually looking at picking a couple up off of those off of eBay. Anybody that wants to can go and check those out. Usually just type in real-time recorder or dual-head recorder, and you'll get a couple things on there that are relatively cheap. We're just trying to educate people. That's all we've ever really wanted to do from the beginning. We don't really want to be, you know, huge and famous and have TV shows and all of that. We just want people to know that there is something out there. From everything that we've seen, there's something there, whether it be us psychically imprinting things on our tapes as we're recording. Something is happening, and it needs to be investigated further, and I do think it is a good thing that many, many people are opening up to this subject, and more people get into it every day.
Tools
become easier to get on the Internet.
Yeah.
Anyone can do it. It just takes a little research. You know, as you start, you kind of stumble through things, but we all get better over time.
And that's a refreshing viewpoint, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's very nice to see that, because a lot of people, I think that's one of the bad things that's going on right now, is a lot of people get into this because they think it may be an easy way for them to get themselves on TV. Really, that's the bottom line with a lot of it. I mean,
I've been on TV.
Yes.
It's not always cracked up to be.
Yeah, it's all that fun, man. So, unfortunately, we have to go to break, though, Bo. Thank you for coming on and talking to us, participating
so in Ghost www.orbchasers.com. Bo Woods, thank you so much for coming on.
Anytime. It was a pleasure.
Hang on the line for 1 second. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott Allen.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back after this.